Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always by my good friends and partners in radio, Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. Boys, we have nothing to discuss today. But before we get into nothing, I have a complaint, actually. I've had people in my life complaining about someone typing over the audio in the episode that dropped this week. And listen, I just don't want there to be anything between the three of us in our relationship. I want there to be total honesty, boys, okay? Because if we're going to do radio together for the next 50 years, that has to be the atmosphere. So I just want to come clean and say that it wasn't me typing. My keys do not sound like that. Whoever was typing, it sounded like they were typing on like a Smith Corona Galaxis from the 70s. It was very loud typing. So I just want to know who it was, not to judge, not to think of you any differently, but who was typing last week? Mm.
So here's the problem with this question. Mm. Okay. That requires me remembering what happened last week.
Yeah, that's true.
And also not misremembering, which is a way that one gets out of things that one is guilty for. I'm guessing it was me, but I don't have any specific recollection. But I'm pretty sure it was me. The thing is, I type during every episode, and so it must have been a goofy microphone setting I had that it picked it up and bothered people.
Yeah, interesting. Piper, I appreciate your candor on that. Thank you. You know, if we're going to heal, we need to be honest. Ronald, anything to add to this?
Yeah, I mean, dude, I mean, I'm not on like some old Model T Ford like computer either. I got the latest MacBook Air.
Little flex there from Ronald.
Little plug.
Sorry, I forgot to mention. I also have the latest MacBook Air. As long as we're doing,
computer flex.
We're doing Mac measuring contests.
Do you have the latest Dell? You have the latest Dell, right, Big T?
I'm looking at the latest Dell. You know.
But dude, I type. I'm like Pipe. I type every app.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Wow, dude. So you guys are so busy. Your lives are so full. You're so in demand that like you can't even take 45 minutes and stop.
And all my best sermon prep happens during the rant.
Mm. Interesting. Things must be just like popping off there, sojourn wise, budget wise. I mean, with you and the latest MacBook Air. I mean, suffering for Jesus there. Ronald.
Whatever, man. By latest, I mean like I'm a year and a half old with this thing, so it's actually not latest. And but we should talk about what that moment will be when I get my latest MacBook Air, and I won't have to have clickety clack keys.
Now, baby, know? Are you one of those guys that like you gotta kind of have the latest Apple product?
No, I don't. No, I'm not, dude. I literally don't care. Don't care. Yeah.
Okay. But you're
happy with the Dell. I'd be happy with the latest Dell or even a 2-year-old Dell.
Interesting.
Other than Dell's kind of, it's not as compact. I like things that are a little more compact to fit into my, here's a plug, Saddleback leather goods.
Your $700 bag. Yeah. Correct. With not quite enough space in it.
Right. All my baggage is worth more than my techie products, you know, and I would always have it that way too.
Fascinating. Piper, speaking of sponsors, that are still on board, why don't you tell us about Dwell Bible?
Oh, yeah, we do have a sponsor this week, don't we? Dwell app, our longtime partner and sponsor, is an audio Bible app. I use them pretty consistently, so here's how I use Dwell app currently more than anything else. It is to keep me sanctified while sitting in Nashville traffic, trying not to think homicidal thoughts about terrible drivers around me. And I've tried audiobooks, and I've tried podcasts, and I've tried music, and none of them work very well. But Scripture has a remarkable sanctifying effect if you weren't aware of that. So that's how I use Dwell currently. So if you go to dwellapp.io/happyrant, you can see they have a special offer for our listeners. It's a 33% discount. It's about $20 a year subscription to it. As part of that subscription, you have access to listening plans and a whole variety of features that allow you to pull out particular segments to listen to for reflection, for memorization. You can you can just sort of chop it up however you want. They have multiple narrators. They have musical backgrounds. So you can sort of create a listening environment that suits what you are trying to accomplish, whether it's memorization or study or just listening to absorb, learn, meditate, those kinds of things. So again, that's dwellapp.io/happyrant. They have a 33% discount. They also have a free trial if you want to test drive it before purchasing.
Yeah, nicely done there, Pipe. So here's the dilemma that that I'm seeing this morning is that we have this podcast, wildly successful, you know, trending in other countries. We've just come off this mountaintop kind of talking about John MacArthur and Kanye West in the same episode. We know that Piper has issues. You know, we know that he is a terrible person because he didn't like Kanye West's record. Which makes him terrible. But beyond that, boys, we don't have a whole lot to talk about. And I dare say the three of us don't really feel like doing this. So the question is, how are we going to redeem this time? How are we going to make it work for us? How are we going to create radio out of nothing? So, Ronald, should we talk about Pipe's issues vis-a-vis the Kanye record and why it makes him a terrible person? Or yeah, should we talk in a more kind of broad sense about what do you do when you host a wildly successful radio program and you have nothing to talk about?
Yeah, I like to combo the two things. I mean, if anything, it keeps us talking about Kanye, and I think that's our obligation as Christians.
Absolutely.
And number two, why does it ever matter what anybody thinks about a commercial product? I like that question. Why does it matter what Pipe thinks, I think, you think? What does Kanye think about Kanye's record? There's a question that nobody's been able to answer yet.
Well, dude, this is something that we've actually been talking about in one of my classes, and it's how and I'd be curious to hear from both of you whether you think this phenomenon has gotten worse in a modern context or if it was worse kind of when we were growing up. But I think the reason that people care, Ron, is that isn't it a truism that we all use the consumer products that we consume as planks in our persona platform in the same way that you flexed about having like the latest MacBook Air that weighs, 0.002 ounces and, slides ever so nicely into your $700 worth of like Corinthian leather that you walk out of the house strapped to your shoulder with every morning. Like those are in and of themselves planks in your persona platform. And by liking them, you're saying something about yourself. So I think in this moment that we're in with Kanye West, like uncool reformed people are using liking the record to make themselves either look cooler or look open-minded about Kanye's conversion. Like these are persona builders. So I guess the fact that Pipe doesn't like the record, it says something about his persona one way or the other. Now, do you guys think that phenomenon is worse now or was worse before?
Well, I think, I think it's worse now, but I think when you have something that across the board becomes sort of, standardized, which is, hey, Kanye made a Christian album, therefore Christians need to like the album regardless of whether they like the album or not. Sure. When somebody like Pipe, who has a little bit more of a platform, kind of goes forward and says, it's not my jam, I don't really care for it. It puts a level of threat into the minds of all the people that are like, well, I sort of have to like this. I need to like this. It's a good thing for me to like this, you know? It's strange. Yeah.
It's a weird thing, too, because I feel like people cannot separate the fact that I think the album is bad musically from the fact that I really would like Kanye to be eternally saved. Those don't seem at all at odds with me. I mean, that's true for literally every music artist in the Christian industry right now. I don't like their albums for the most part. Yeah. I really want their souls to be in a good place.
Sure.
I don't think there's any obligation to like somebody's art just because they have claimed the name of Jesus. And in fact, doing art in the name of Jesus historically has created some really terrible art. And I feel like this was Kanye's worst album that I have heard. And that doesn't, for some reason, that's more threatening or bothersome to people than if he had not claimed Christ. I think people would just be like, "Oh, you have an opinion," but because this is an issue, I'm now siding with the devil or something to that effect. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's like saying that you don't like Tim Tebow kneeling in the end zone 10 years ago, you know?
Or like saying you don't like Tim Tebow's throwing motion. Like, I think Tim Tebow was a bad quarterback in the NFL. Sure. He's a great college player. And and that's offensive to some people because they're like, but he's a Christian. That doesn't have anything to do with whether or not he can hit a 15-yard out pattern. Like, they're just they're not remotely connected.
That's right. That's right. Yet, Christians take this stuff so personally because I think, and this is kind of getting back to the original point, you're not liking Kanye's record pipe at some level ruins their enjoyment of whatever kind of persona work they're doing vis-a-vis Kanye, right?
Yes.
So if they're excited about it and they're celebrating it and they haven't really probably listened to much rap music ever, you know, maybe they're enjoying it, you know, and hearing you say that it's bad musically, or you don't like the music in the record. That's kind of raining on their discovering Kanye West parade. And I do get that, you know, now that doesn't give them license to go after you. But it's just kind of the world we live in, right? Where, if you ruin my enjoyment of anything by having a contrary opinion, then I'm just going to rip your face off on Twitter, I guess.
How do you guys respond to this? So you really enjoy something. Just pick a thing. Okay, what's a thing that you both really enjoy? Downton Abbey is a good example. You have talked extensively about your deep love for Downton Abbey. I am completely agnostic and ignorant of Downton Abbey. I have zero opinions because I don't know anything about it. But there are plenty of guys who would say that, you know, you are girly men or it's terrible or whatever. Does that make the slightest dent in your enjoyment at all? Does it push you further into enjoyment out of a sense of being contrary? Is it what is the response to the persona war built around enjoyment?
It makes no difference to me at all. However, I will admit that I like, from a persona standpoint, right? So it would be easy to talk about persona from a like 1,000-foot high horse and say that, you know, Ronald and I are above it, which is probably the temptation for both of us, to be honest. Like, knowing Ron and knowing myself, being above doing persona work would be like, you know, the temptation to lie right now. But
that is the persona, is being above the persona.
Yeah, not having a persona is your persona, but it's BS, right? If we're being honest with ourselves, we both do like mad persona work. We just do it in different ways. I'll admit I like being the kind of guy who likes Downton Abbey. Now, I think 90% of that is just liking the show itself, but 10% is enjoying being the contrarian, like, I can watch this genteel, like, British costume drama. Yeah, I don't have to be watching, like, a tractor pull or a boxing fight to be a dude, you know? So at that level, like, I guess it is persona work. Ronald, what do you say about it?
Yeah, no, I don't know how I can add to that. I mean, I somebody else not liking something I like has never like changed my opinion or made me, you know, like something less. It just that's so weird that even in like the way that I think and process things, that doesn't make any sense to me. You know what I mean? Because here's the thing. There's never been 100% of everybody that's liked one thing. And so if you took it that, you would never like one thing. If it was dependent on everybody liking it and not anybody having a negative opinion on it, it lacks logic in some ways. And I'm not like a super logic guy on any level, but that's where I break those things down and go, oh, great. You don't like it? Great. You're not going to sit in my living room and watch this with me anyway. You know, like what does it have to do practically speaking with my level of enjoyment of it? It just doesn't add up to me at all.
Let me ask you another question related to this. I see this kind of persona work traditionally as the purview of like people who are in their teens and 20s.
Yes.
However, one thing that I see about right now is that people in their 40s are doing it to each other, which seems dumb to me. It seems like we should be done using like records and TV shows as persona builders. Like we should be done with that in like high school and college. You know, you should be finished like swinging your Quentin Tarantino movies and your Saturday Night Live references around. Like when she hit age 24,
should be or Terrence Malick, he's sort of
lovely man though.
Yeah, lovely guy, Terry. I love Terry. He's wonderful, beautiful. In fact, yeah, he's sort of has. I think he's sort of on the older end of that. Like you get into your 30s and 40s, and you move on from, you know, did you see Kill Bill to did you see the latest Terry film?
Yeah, Tree of Life. Right. It's so beautiful. You know, why are people doing this in their 40s? This is dumb. Is this purely a function of social media?
Yeah, it's I think it's we enjoy. I mean, I think you could break it down. I mean, so I think it's easy to break down in the sense that it's fun to be around other people that share your interests. There's a sense of community about that. So for me and you, Big T, I don't want to go see Downton Abbey with Pipe. I want to go see Downton Abbey with you because we share that commonality.
Exactly.
And so I think on a very basic level, it just brings us back to community, which is two different people who are coming together on a shared interest. And that's something that builds friendship and it builds trust and it just makes life more enjoyable because we have something of which we can riff and talk about. And someday, you know, again, we are going to launch that podcast. Let me just put a plug in for the Happy Abbey. But I think at its most base level, that's what that represents for me. Yeah. You know, but
that's,
again, it
that's what it represents for you. But I think for it in that context, there's a reason why. So you love something. If somebody else doesn't love it, you also don't care that they don't love it. Like you don't think less of them for enjoying a different show or movie or, you know, whatever.
I don't even disagree with them because it's a matter of it's subjective when it comes to taste and style and all those things. So I can just go, well, yeah, it's not my thing, but I'm also okay with you liking something that I don't like because I know I like things you don't like. That, I mean, that literally is like that is how the world like pivots on its axis. Yes.
Right.
You know what I mean?
But I think you are anomalous in that way. To you know, compared to the majority who pick what they like based on how it will be perceived and how it positions them, not just a pure and simple do I or do I not enjoy this. And then because if it's a pure and simple enjoyment, you then connect with people who like the same thing, you know, whether it's Downton Abbey or Kanye's album or cheeseburgers or whatever. You just, the common enjoyment is fun. It brings people together.
Sure.
If it's a positioning thing and it's a status thing, there's then a threat aspect because if somebody likes something different, it's a status difference or they're threatening your position. And I think that has a lot to do with social media and just general insecurity, which social media feeds into. You have to be really kind of, there's a certain amount of self-image security and being able to say that you really enjoy something that is not cool or that is not that is not the current trend or that you really dislike something that the masses have decided is the right thing to like, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, we talked in a previous episode about sort of the pressure towards white wokeness amongst 40 something, you know, 30 and 40 something people. And it's not cool to be like, I think this is nonsense. I don't think this means anything because.
Yeah.
So I think there's just a ton of insecurity leading to essentially like popularity by democracy, what the masses have decided, what is right, is cool, is good. And then that's all tribal too. So is it Reformed Christianity or millennial people or white folks or like however you're dividing the population that you are then trying to impress?
But it also seems, it also seems intrinsic to age though too, kind of what you were going back to, T, which is like, this is kind of the thing you're essentially discussing with your students on a daily basis, right?
Yeah.
But I feel like once you get past the age of, like, I don't know, 18, like, it's fascinating to think that this is still a thing.
Right, right. No, I agree. And it's just funny, though, because I think social media has made it a thing for 40-year-olds to quibble over, whereas, like, remembering back to when my dad was 40, I can't imagine him sitting around with his buddies and going, well, wow, you guys are lame because you don't like the new, you know, Moody Blues record or the Earth, Wind, and Fire record. Yeah,
it's unthinkable.
like for our dads to sit around spending like 1 second doing that. It's just utterly laughable and unthinkable for them to have done that. But yet that's the self same thing that guys our age are doing like this very second, you know, like Christian dudes in their 40s are having these like heated debates over their response to the Kanye record, which is just utterly ridiculous to me. But very funny at the same time. And I think it, back to what you were saying though, Pipe, I think it has created more stress, right? It's created more stress because with all of these issues, you're wondering like, am I on the right side of the Kanye debate, or am I woke enough to please like the people in my life? And, I think that's why, you know, not to take it to too fine a point, but I mean, it's why there's way more like stressed out, depressed, anxious people in 2019 than there were in, you know, 1993.
Well, it's, yeah, it's a weird thing. I remember maybe 2-3 years ago, I stumbled across some music by Leon Bridges, who's a, he's a, you know, does sort of like Motown, R&B, soul, it really funky, cool stuff.
Yeah, he's good. He's played at our school before.
And which school?
Union.
Okay, I was thinking the one your kids went to, and I was like, really?
No.
That seems unlikely to me.
No one cool has ever played at that school.
They're not playing at the Latin co-op, man. Bridges in to do the
they're not
Latin
playing at the Renaissance Fest.
Does he know Agnus Dei in full Latin? Because if so, he can come play.
Hey, their money spins too. Just to be clear.
So I stumble across music by him, and I post something on Twitter about how cool I thought it was, and there was two responses. One of which I really appreciated, the enjoyment response, and the other was like the D-bag pressure response. The one I appreciated was, I know, isn't he amazing? Just sort of the fellow enjoyer of good music, which is great.
Yeah.
The other was, oh, how did you not know about him? That album came out a year ago.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I gotta prove my intellect by.
I know, I'm sorry that I just found a good thing. Like, my bad. Yeah. My bad that it's no longer valid
to
enjoy this thing.
You're not allowed to discover an album even a day after it comes out.
No, right? Exactly. It's gotta be day of. You got an 8-hour window, or else.
It actually needs to be about 6 months in advance because you knew about him before everybody else did.
Right, exactly. I guess my enjoyment was invalid because it was late. And I'm sure even Leon Bridges feels that way. He wishes that nobody else would discover his first album because it came out at this point like 3 years ago. It's
how dare you spend money on my record 6 months later? You know,
I mean, that's how I feel about my books. Every time somebody's like, "Hey, just ran across your books," I'm like, "Get out, go away, go home. Why are you even reading that?
Right? How did you not discover this 6 months ago? No, it's terrible. I mean, it's truly don't you think though? Don't you think Twitter was just made for that kind of a-hole? You know, if there's a very specific like a-hole type and that's part of it, Twitter was made for that person. Because they must derive so much pleasure from it, you know, from like composing that tweet, hitting send or whatever, and just having it be there. Twitter is made for that guy.
It's just such a bummer because it's also made for the other guy who's like, I know, don't you love track 6 where he just, you know, and sort of the reveling. There's so much opportunity to use social media in a fun way, and people just suck at it.
Yeah, they do. They do. Yeah, Ronald, like, anything to add to this topic, this non-topic topic?
No.
Ronald, have you come out with anything creative that we can no longer enjoy because it's been out for longer than 7 minutes?
Yeah, I actually just posted a song from a collaboration album I did with my brother in 2007. Mm-hmm. And so I feel a lot of shame right now for doing that.
Well, is that old enough to be sort of remastered and reintroduced? Like, if it was 2015, it just doesn't matter. But 2007, that's getting old enough, right?
It's not even remastered or re-released. I just came across a song. Something popped up like on my YouTube channel, one of the songs that we did from it. And I hadn't heard it in probably 10 years, no exaggeration. Yeah. And I just clicked on it and I'm like, oh yeah, I kind of like that song. So I just posted it. And, but now I feel like I feel shame now for doing that voice.
So Ronald, here's marketing gold for you in 2019. And this goes for pastoral ministry and your music career. And I think this is true of almost all bought and sold things in 2019. Like, if you can release something with which someone else can use that item to build another plank in their persona, then you've hit marketing gold. But if you just release a good song, it's not enough. You know what I'm saying? Because Kanye has released a lot of records full of good songs, and none of them have gotten the buzz that this one has gotten. You know, if you release something that someone can use, so you have to comb back through your library and go, how can someone use this to feel smug or cool or more enlightened or more thoughtful or more woke or more whatever? And then that's the thing you want to sell. You know what I mean?
Those are the questions we have to ask now. It's not that I just write and record a pleasant song. How can this benefit somebody's platform?
Yeah, as if making a good song isn't hard enough. Like, that's not like rolling out of bed. Somebody could just make a good song, right? But it has to be the very right sort of persona building thing too.
To Ronnie's credit, when he was fully invested as a full time musician, he kind of did that. Now, it wasn't about it. It was pre wokeness and you know, whatever. But but it was sort of an avant-garde niche of music. So he wasn't playing to the mainstream. And so when people liked his music, they had discovered as like the secret room of Christian music kind of thing. And his fans of Joy Electric still talk about that music today. Like when they run across each other, there's sort of like the knowing nod, like, oh yeah, you like them too. And they find such great pleasure in the fact that, you know, all of those Jars of Clay fans and whatever are not among them. He did provide a certain level of sort of smug enjoyment to a collection of listeners, for sure.
Wow, thanks, Pipe. That's really nice, man. I provided smug enjoyment to a collection of listeners. I'm going to use that. I'm going to use that for my current platform, for sure. You know,
Pipe, wouldn't you say that in 2019, smugness is the ultimate marketing tool? Like, if you can deliver smugness, you've really done something.
Smugness has been standardized.
Yeah, that's a good. I'm trying to think of anything that sort of assails that point that you just made that might overcome it. I'm not coming up with a lot. I think.
Right.
I'm struggling to find the lie in that statement. I think smugness is sort of the. It's the persona of the day, for sure.
It really is. And I think social media was made for smugness. And you're right in saying, Pipe, that it was made for all these other potentially good things, right? Like finding like-minded communities of people who enjoy the same stuff and all that. But at the end of the day, it was really made for smugness. And I think it delivers that in droves.
Why smugness and not something? Is it because everything is so sort of politicized or politically correct that you can't be outwardly antagonistic, you know, so you can't just outright be like, I'm better than you, or my product is better than yours, or you're an idiot. Uh-huh. There has to be sort of a quiet, passive aggressive, like, I know I'm better, but I'm just going to sort of smirk about it rather than announcing it.
I just think it's I think it goes back to what we said in the beginning. It's a defense mechanism, because it's not enough to just be able to enjoy the things you enjoy. You have to enjoy them in such a way that nobody's going to say anything negative about the fact that you enjoy them. And because somehow that's going to ruin your enjoyment of them. Like, so what that person thinks about what I enjoy, that either, you know, increases or lessens the enjoyment. I think it just brings us back full circle, you know, to where why should there be any play in that in terms of?
Well, it's made more complicated by our Christianness, in which in many cases we kind of feel like we have to defend every purchase, right? So you have to justify your $700 bag by saying, yeah, but I use it to carry all my theology books, or, you know, somebody gave it to me. Right. I mean, we justify it by saying a friend gave it to me, or I carry theology books in it, or I got it on my podcast as a sponsorship. You know, everything is so much more public and complicated now. Whereas I think in 1993, if you had a $700 bag, you weren't bloviating about it on your podcast. You weren't posting pictures of it on social. I mean, if you took a trip in 1993, you were just a guy taking a trip. You know, it wasn't a photo op. It didn't invite your friends to feel either jealous or envious or like they had to come up with a better trip. You know what I'm saying? Like, stuff happened more in a vacuum back then. And I think now everything is either an invitation to jealousy or an invitation to feel superior.
There's the guilt aspect of things where, so for example, people buy consumer goods for quote unquote, like justice reasons or good causes. Sure. And so, you know, once upon a time, if you wore a particular brand, I don't know, pick like Polo or whatever, like every brand has had its day. And that was sort of a status symbol, but now it's the, like, every time I buy this pair of shoes, a pair of shoes is given to somebody in, you know, another country, or I buy these glasses and somebody has provided glasses. And so there's a, which then leads, which again feeds into smugness, because you can announce the goodness of your consumerism, as well as making other people feel less than for their lack. I mean, I'm sorry, you bought your shirt at Target? That's terrible. Yeah. I bought my shirt for twice as much, but you know, they sent $7 to somebody in Indonesia.
Some like war refugee made it with his bare hands. Yeah, you brought your shirt at just a regular for-profit store, you monster. You know who I blame for this? Who was the OG little hipster in like 12 years ago that made that company where you get the canvas shoes and somebody else gets a pair of canvas shoes?
Tom's shoes?
Yeah, I blame Tom. I blame that guy. He ruined everything. Shopping used to be fun before that guy, you know?
Dude, everything. I remember, so I was at the Catalyst Conference in Atlanta, and so this would have been 2008 or 9 maybe, and Tom's shoes had just come out, and so they knew at that point they hadn't gone to, you know, they weren't in shoe stores and things like that, so they knew that this had to be a niche market to faith-based groups primarily, so they they were a phenomenon amongst the, like, the Gen X and older millennial church leader crowd at Catalyst. People loved it. And now, like, Tom's is just common. Like, they're the OG, but that whole model is just commonplace now.
Yeah everybody does it now.
But, yeah, they definitely started that brush fire. Sorry, California. Touchy subject. But, they did that.
Interesting. Did you guys get Tom's back in the day?
No, they're not comfortable.
Yeah, they look like just really uncomfortable, crappy shoes to me.
I think my daughter had like 20 or 30 pairs of them, though. That would have been like more her scene, her era.
Yeah, dude, it was that era. It was right when I started like teaching college back in the late like 2000s. So, yeah, 2008, 9, 10. Every college kid had like multiple pairs of those.
I mean, at the risk of sounding all daddish, I mean, is Tom's still a thing? Or, like, are people still wearing Tom's?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like I don't see a lot of, like, maybe it's become so ingrained in the culture now. It's like, I don't notice people wearing Chuck Taylors, but like everybody's wearing them. So is it become that kind of a thing?
I'm wearing Chuck Taylors right now, actually.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm looking up Tom's shoes, but I'm doing it on my phone, listeners, so that I do not have to type on the computer. You're welcome.
And guys, let me just apologize to our listeners really quick, because we said the word woke or wokefulness, I think, 7 times. I counted. Yeah. So let me just make sure we're clearing the decks with that real quick.
Why are you apologizing for
that? I do that at this point. I feel just, like you're doing, just to needle people.
Because I don't like that to be my persona on this program.
I feel like you're doing persona work. What, are you too good for the word woke?
I'm just afraid of it. I'm just afraid of the word.
Baby, how woke do you consider yourself? Something that in all of our years of friendship, we've never talked about this.
Dude, I don't know if that's not the trickiest question anybody's ever asked me in 2019.
I know, but it's persona.
How woke are you?
For your persona, you need to have this sussed out. This needs to be a thing that you have an answer for.
I think that I probably am the most woke evangelical, maybe, in evangelicalism. I would say I'm number one.
You're the number one. You get the award. You get the even.
Okay, well, here's the problem with that. Here's the problem with that statement. If you're truly woke, you have abandoned evangelicalism, Ronnie. So you can't be woke and an evangelical. That's not how it works.
Exactly.
Which just proves that I'm the least woke person.
Tom's shoes still exist. They are for sale at Macy's.
Macy's has always been a Tom seller.
Nordstrom, DSW, Rack Room Shoes, Backcountry.com, Zappos, shoes. Yeah, I mean, they're at this point, they're in the big shoe game. You know,
it's like apple pie, baseball. I mean, and Chevrolet. I mean, Tom's is just American shoeing.
Boys, you know what I want more than anything? I mean, maybe not more than anything, in that I just thought of it like a minute and a half ago. I want a shoe sponsor on the program. I want us getting shoes. I want free shoes.
Why do you not have that?
I don't know, but I really want like.
Does Saddleback make leather boots?
Because I want these like up and coming hipster like bespoke shoe companies to reach out, man, to hit us up.
I don't. I want Red Wing boots so I can get another pair of Irish setters. That's what I want. Like I don't.
Dude, I would take Red Wing boots. I would for sure.
The problem with hipster shoe companies is that they make shoes that are. They are essentially they look handmade. Let's just put it that way. They look like something that people wore in like Five Points, New York in 1887.
When Leo was making that movie with Liam Neeson.
Yeah, like that movie? They're either like slippers or like hobnail boots.
Gangs of New York. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're probably not going to want to advertise on probably the most successful podcast in America
of all time. So, yeah.
Also, I mean, if we were a little more like indie and a little more underground, but the fact is, the thing's just gotten too big now. That's why it's hard for us to get support for more.
Well, baby,
like,
hear this. I would take Nike too. So, Phil Knight, if you're listening, and I know you are, I know the Knight family probably listening around the hearth there in their 12 billion square foot, you know, Oregon home. We would take a Nike sponsorship.
Yeah, Nike, Adidas, you know, Converse. Absolutely. I mean, we're only going to get the big guns.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the big guns at this point. But, Piper, I want to go back to Ronald's wokeness just for a couple minutes. And
Ronnie does not want us to go back there, so let's do it.
I want to get a barometer on Ron's sensitivity, too, because something we talked about via text was vulnerable voice about how if you're a Christian hipster in 2019, you have to sound like a valley girl from the 70s in that every sentence ends with a question mark.
Oh, dude, I love that. Right? I love that text, man. I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to talk
about
that.
Do you love vulnerability voice? Is this a thing you employ?
Dude, I absolutely have no toleration for it. It drives me up the wall.
So why does every like Christian hipster dude south of 40 sound like one of these like chicks?
You mean like they end like everything with like a question? Do you mean like when you're asking me this question, like you want to know why I talk like this, or you want to know like what's been going on in my life? Or,
I want to know everything about that. Where it started, like why we're doing it, why it's the official sound of vulnerability. It's fascinating to me.
I have a theory on this.
Lay it out, right? Yes.
I think it's okay. So I'm gonna make definitive statements that end in periods, listeners. So
wow,
if you find that offensive,
not very woke of you, Pi.
Well, it's miraculous you've made it 38 minutes into this podcast. But I think that is the voice of vulnerability because definitive statements are threatening to people. Everything is so built around dialogue, and it's a give and take. It's a conversation that to say, I think X is, you almost need to apologize for it. Or if you pose it as sort of like a question, and so you have an opinion that kind of ends like this, then it's a lot safer. You make people feel safer. Also, they get to completely disregard what you just said because you didn't say it with any conviction.
Yeah. And because you sound like a 7-year-old girl.
It's also a really safe place for pastors in terms of how they communicate to people too, because it means you can't really nail them down on anything.
Yeah. And
they can say, you know, I'm just asking the question. I'm just proposing.
Yeah.
You know, what could be.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Did the book I wrote with Katie Y all those years ago mean nothing? I thought we killed this. I thought we killed it like 12 years ago. But alas, we did not.
There's the title for the next book, the follow-up. Alas, we did not. No. Alas, we did not?
We did not? Question mark? Yeah. Oh, I love it, boys. You know what, though? I think it's time to kill this episode.
Oh, maybe. I would love if you would do that.
Yes. Yes,
oh,
baby.
Oh, my gosh. That is the best news I've heard.
Hear
all
me
morning.
Saying, I'm here to kill this episode.
Say it again.
Is this a definitive statement, or are you considering killing the episode? Maybe.
I'm here to kill this episode. I can't even do it.
We've wandered to and fro.
We've wandered to and fro throughout these topics. Get some rest. Get some margin. We have wandered to and fro throughout these topic points. I can't even talk now. Vulnerable voice is like, it's ruined my ability to do good radio. It's so stupid.
Really?
Boys, we've wandered to and fro throughout these topics. And until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Hey there, it's Carly Mercool, your host of Therapy and Theology, a weekly podcast that explores popular topics and questions related to faith, feelings, and spiritual formation. Subscribe at lifeaudio.com.